good-looking beard. There's nothing like a man with a good-looking beard.
And welcome back. Another iteration of Behind the Beard WNC. My name's Patrick Pohl. I'm joined by the Andersons and Carson Jones. This is a podcast where basically four bloviating bags of hot air get together and banter about high school stuff, mostly football. It can go basketball, other sports, and it can go completely off the rails, as we've demonstrated many times. And, you know, we do this mostly for our entertainment. We hope you're entertained, too. But if you're not, we understand there's other options you can go listen to. And we continue on with our coach's interview. And we have head coach Shane Laws of the Rockets of A.C. Reynolds High School joining us today. Coach played at App State, came to A.C. Reynolds as an assistant in 1997, took the reins in 07. One of the winningest coaches in all of North Carolina and one of the all-time winningest head coach. Well, he is the all-time winningest head coach in ACR football history by total games and winning percentage. 13 conference championships, 2 Western regional championships, the state title for 4A in 09, and runner-up for 3A state in 17. So, Coach, welcome. Thanks for taking the time and coming out to talk to us about your team and the upcoming season.
Thanks. I appreciate y'all having me.
Yeah, so, just out of the gate on last year, obviously a great run that you had there. I was thinking about a couple of things. Another deep run that you had, that big win over Kings Mountain, just phenomenal. Obviously, you have the eventual loss to the state champion Hickory. Tough game, obviously, that. And you had Max out for most of the season, Max Guest with the injury. Big step up, though. You had, Malik come in and Tyvon, and they filled that gap. I mean, I thought miraculously well last year when Max went down.
Well, I think the most impressive thing about that team was the way they handled the start. I mean, they knew going into the season the first 4 games were going to be extremely difficult. And we kind of went through a little bit of drama going into the season when we lost some players and transfer portal. And then you open up the season with these 4 really good football teams, and you lose 3 of the 4, all within 6 points of each other, and had a chance to win every one of those games. And it would have been real easy for those guys to kind of fold a little bit and lose who they were. But instead, they did the exact opposite. They listened to what we were telling them and had faith that these tough circumstances were going to make them better down the stretch and later on in the season, and they just consistently continued to get better and better and better each week. And they were really a fun group of kids to coach because of that. And I was just really, really proud of the way they handled the beginning of the season, took it into the conference, played well in all the big games in the conference schedule. And this was probably, as far as injuries, the worst season I've had with guys being banged up and hurt. And every time you turned around, it was, who's out this week? And a lot of it was early in the season, too, when we were playing some of the best people. And then it kind of caught us again against Hickory when we played a really good Kings Mountain team in a really physical, tough game and figured out a way to win it. But we just – it beat us up so much. And then going into Hickory, who was already a tremendous football team, and having so many guys either not available or playing hurt, it's tough to beat a team like that when you don't have all your bullets. But I really, really enjoyed coaching that group of guys. They were kids that just, they found a way each and every week, came to practice every week with the right mindset. Those are Reynolds kids. That's how Reynolds football players, over all my years there, for the most part, that's just their, that's just their makeup. And I think that's part of the reason I love the place so much and love coaching those guys and have stayed as long as I have, because, you get good, tough kids that love to play on Friday nights and kids that really want to win a championship and make their own little place in the history of our program.
You know, you had those injuries in the beginning and the front end, and obviously you always schedule those tough schedules on the front end, and you had the injuries happen. But then, it seemed like, you know, the conference stuff was getting ready to start up. And, you know, historically, Reynolds usually just kind of really just takes care of business when it comes to conference play. But it seemed like this year, you had North Buncombe come out of the gate. We were talking about that quite a bit last year, where they were, you know, tearing up the streets in Weaverville because they were doing so well. And then they ran into Reynolds, and that was not a not how they wanted that to go. And then, you know, the whole thing with T.C. Robertson, that was really cool hype. But it was seemed like, you know, you had a little more hype around the conference play this year. It wasn't just a foregone conclusion that Reynolds was going to walk through it.
It was. It was, you know, I think our guys kind of got tired of listening to, in the early part of the season, you know, North Buncombe's 3-0, and yeah, after what they went through the first 4 weeks compared to some of the other teams in the conference and who they were playing and that kind of thing. And then, of course, we, you know, we knew Robertson was going to have a good football team. And our guys, I thought, handled themselves really well all season. They just kind of let it, you know, we'll handle it when it's time. And they listened to all the talk. And, you know, the newspaper guy climbed on the ram wagon and all that stuff. And but I did. I asked him, you know, I asked him after we played TC, you know, after all that talk about, you know, this being TC's year and this, that, and the other, you know, maybe you should have done a little more research before you started writing some of those articles. But it was fun. I mean, because it's that was the first time in a while that besides TC and Reynolds just not liking one another and that being part of the rivalry, I mean, they had a really good football team. And, you know, the game itself, there was a lot that went into that week. And again, you know, that was our kids being ready to play in a big game. And I think, you know, the games they had played in the past, in particular games earlier in the season, you know, we were ready for that. They, you know, and we tell our kids all the time, big games are what we do. That's why you play at Reynolds, to get an opportunity to play in games like this. And I think that helped us going into the TC game because, you know, it was another big game. And the kids responded really well.
And great season, obviously. And at the end of it, you wind up, I think, the total at the end, after all was said and done with the recruiting season, nine seniors that went on to? Yeah. Is it 10?
Well, actually, we're at 11. Because I found out today that Malik has committed to Shaw University.
Awesome.
So, and we range from Division I all the way to D3 and NAIA. But to have 11 out of 19 seniors getting a chance to go to college and keep playing football, I think that's pretty cool.
Heck yeah. It's awesome.
Yeah, losing 19 seniors, that's got to be tough looking forward to this year.
It is. It's you know, anytime you lose, I mean, losing seniors, you're losing experience. That's what makes from spring ball up until that first game, you know, so stressful, because you feel like the younger guys are drinking from a fire hose. You know, you're trying to shove so much in there, but it's you know, that's pretty typical for us. We're usually around 18 to 24 seniors. And this particular group was, they were, you know, like I said earlier, they were just really fun to coach. They loved to play football. They loved playing football at Reynolds High School. And they're just, I don't know that there was anything else we could have asked of those guys that they didn't deliver. And it's, you know, it's hard. We go out there in spring and you start those first couple days and you're looking at spots that guys that you're used to seeing for the last 4 years aren't there anymore, and it's, you know, that's kind of sad. But this was, you know, another, and I think it's kind of become the tradition at Reynolds when you're a senior class, you don't want to be the class that doesn't put a ball on the wall. You don't want to be the class that doesn't make a run in the playoffs. You don't want to be looked at like that. So the kids take a lot of pride and work really hard to make sure their individual mark gets left.
So really two of the most impressive things of last year, and you kind of talked about them a little bit, those first four games, you know, you lost three of them by a total 8 points. You were in every one of them without arguably your best player. And then Kings Mountain, 15-0. Everybody said that Reynolds will never be able to score on Kings Mountain. And, I mean, you proved them wrong.
Well, it was – we figured out a way to win. It was not the most, it wasn't the prettiest offensive output of the season.
It usually isn't that when you get to the playoffs.
No, when you get to that point, it's usually not. But I remember late in the game telling Coach Craig, hey, we're not going to score you. So, you know. I mean, the player of the game is Ross Santilli.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the punter, yeah.
And, I mean, he – you know, we played really well defensively that night. Rossi kept flipping the field. And offensively, we kind of picked and carefully when we were going to try to take a chance and we were going to try to do something. And fortunately, we were able to just enough. But like you said, that's playoff football, especially when you get to about third round on. Yeah. It's just – kind of,
it's usually not pretty.
No, and we tell the kids all the time when we get to that point, and you know they get tired of hearing me say it. But when you get to that point, it's usually 6-7 plays in a game. You don't know where they're going to be in games like that, but it's 6 or 7 games that'll determine the outcome of it. And fortunately, against Kings Mountain, we were able to win more of those than they did. But I think we had like 37 yards of offense in one in third round.
That's crazy.
I will say this. We've talked about Pat, how he called TC would be good last year. I went back and listened to the podcast today from last year with Coach Laws. He also said
that's true.
TC would be the team, another good team. We were on the Asheville bandwagon. Clearly, we were wrong.
I let personal feelings and friendships get in the way of that one, so. Coach, looking forward to next year, any glaring, staff changes, we went through your staff last year, any staff changes or anything that the people can get a little preview for?
Well, we haven't lost anybody. We've still got the same guys. We're moving some things around a little bit. Coach Greer, who's coached our receivers the last 2 years, he's going to the offensive line, and that's really where he's comfortable. He was an offensive lineman at Appalachian. And so we moved him there, moved Coach Brow back with the receivers, which he's coached for years, especially when he was offensive coordinator. We've added Coach Bucky Tarr. He's coaching our quarterbacks. We've added former player Tylen James, who's back out of college, and he's coaching our tight ends. And Ryan Hamrick, who is our quarterback, Eli's dad, but he was a really good receiver at NC State. And he's going to help a little bit with our receivers. So we haven't lost anybody, but the staff has gotten bigger. And which in the spring I really liked. We our guys got coached. We had 9 practices in the spring, and there was a lot of coaching going on. And, I feel like we're a little ahead of the curve where we normally are this time of year. And I think part of it is just some of the added staff and how much attention players have got during those 9 practices.
Talking about Eli, of course, everybody in the county is talking about him. How does the team, from a player perspective, look this year?
Good. I don't want to, I'm cautiously optimistic. There's a lot of things that can happen over the course of a football season. We have – the players have worked really hard. They've done all the things that we've asked them to do in as far as off-season things. Obviously, Max being back and 100% plus, he's a little heavier. He's about 190, 192 right now, and a little faster than he was, and he's stronger. And then, the addition with Eli moving in, anytime you have a Division I quarterback, it makes things better. he's a big kid, 6'4", 220, 225, and throws the ball extremely well. We've also got an offensive line back that, for the most part, four of those 5 guys played a whole lot last year.
You really didn't lose much off the offensive line.
No, we just lost this little guy. But
just kidding.
Who was okay. But beside, we lost Brendan, obviously, and that's a 3-year starter. Offensive line is a position that relies so much on experience. So when you lose a 3-year starter, that's going to get you a little bit. But on the bright side, we've got a bunch of other guys that played with him that are still there. I feel like we're athletic. defensively, we've got some holes to fill. We graduated some good defensive players, but we're athletic and we're fast. And right now, the focus really is on the defensive side of the ball, just trying to get those guys caught up on scheme and just getting them ready to play. It's not as much a physical thing as it is just a lot of teaching. And at receiver, we've got a couple. We've got some new guys. Tremaine Keeter, who transferred over from Asheville, is very talented, extremely fast. But he's new, and so he's learning an offense. And so is Eli. I mean, we've got a lot of offensive guys. We got the whole backfield. We're three deep at running back, and all three of those guys are really good. They know what's going on. Most of the offensive linemen know what's going on. Our tight ends know what's going on. But we've got a couple receivers and our quarterback who are still learning. And so I think there is potential, but there is a lot of work that's got to be done between now and August. And we're going to go to Georgia for our first scrimmage date and scrimmage Raven Gap and Raven County. So we'll get a pretty good idea of where we are after that first scrimmage.
Do you think we'll see more of an offense like when Alex Flynn was in, a lot more throwing? Or you still have the best running back in Western North Carolina as well.
Yeah, it's I think we're going to do what we need to do. And the good part about right now at the end of May, when you talk about it, I feel like we can. If you want to walk an extra guy down to try to take Max away, then there's things that Eli can do to hurt you a little bit. And at the same time, if you want to stay too high to try to protect against throwing the ball down the field, then five's going to get it a lot. and it's going to probably be game to game, week to week. Just depending on who we're playing and what the situation is. But right now, I think the good part is just the feeling of knowing that the potential is there, that we can do offensively most of anything that we want to do in the playbook.
Speaking of Max, I think it was this week or last week, but recently just committed to Appalachian State, which is obviously a premier football program, and it's got to make you a little bit of happy with your former background.
Yeah, well, I'm extremely happy.
Yeah.
There were a lot of funny conversations between Max and I, because you, as his coach, and I love him to death, and I'm trying to help him make a really difficult decision, a decision that's going to affect the rest of his life, and not be biased. But I was happy when he called me and said, I think I'm going to do it, Coach. I'm ready to commit. I'm going to go ahead and commit to App. And I think it's a perfect fit for him. I really do. Just, offensively with what they do, I think he'll have a chance to play fairly early. And he'll be at a school that's a football-first school. They love football. And Saturdays up there are unbelievable right now. And I think family-wise, it's a good fit because Brandon's playing at Mars Hill. Max will be in Boone, so it's not going to be tough for Mom to be able to get there and see him play. And if Max plays the night game, go watch Mars Hill in the afternoon and drive 2 hours and go see Max play at the same time. And I think that was a big part of his decision. He wanted, he wants to go away and be able to have a life, be Max, but at the same time, he's really tight with his mom. He wanted her to be able to see him play and not make it hard on her. So I don't know. I was extremely happy, and it's all the way it all worked out. And having friends that are coaching up there that I go way back with, it makes me feel good because I know he's going to be looked after, and I know that. That we're going to get the truth on what's going on, but more than anything, he's going to be playing for a group of coaches that take good care of their kids.
So same first four opponents mm-hmm. this year.
Same four. We're flipping sites. We don't have to go to Forsyth County. both of those will be at home. We'll go to Shelby. week two, and we'll go to Watauga week four.
Which one are you most looking forward to?
East Forsyth. I feel like East Forsyth, I have a ton of respect for them as a program. I think Coach Willard does a great job. They've got dudes all over the field. I mean, they are so athletic. They'll probably be 10 or 12 Division I players for their team. And we went down there last year and basically for the first 15 minutes of the game just did not play and made a ton of mistakes and then had a chance to win it at the end. I think that game was the game that the team showed their character. They showed who they were. And I've never felt good about a loss, but that ride home was not that bad, considering we just lost, because those kids showed us what they were capable of. They showed us what they were made of. You know, and so, we can fix football. We can fix football mistakes real easy. And if they're going to play with that kind of toughness and that kind of character, we'll be fine. But I want to play four quarters this time. I want to see what happens.
I know, listening to last year's, we asked you, the importance of those first four, and I really loved your answer. If you don't mind telling us again, why are those first four? You schedule very tough games. And we talked to a coach the other week that, he's like, I think Shane's crazy. I'm not scheduling those four tough games. So can you tell us why you do that?
Well, there's a couple reasons. I think the biggest reason is our goal is to be playing in late November and the first week of December. And if you want to play then, you have to play good people to prepare yourself for a playoff run. We don't beat Kings Mountain last year in that game without playing the four that we played the first 4 weeks. Our kids, when they get to the playoffs, are not surprised. They're not overwhelmed. They're not intimidated. You go back to 22 and see what that group did in back-to-back weeks with Butler and Chambers. And I think a lot of it had to do with some things that happened earlier in the season. That's the biggest one, is just to be prepared to play at that level. And you may not win. You may not win those first four. It may be tough. But after those first four, there's nothing you're going to see that's gonna freak you out after that. And then one of the other main reasons is it answers a lot of questions really fast. You can play some weaker opponents and ease your way into the season and then get into the conference and have issues that you didn't know you had because you played against some people that didn't expose them. And I'll go ahead and tell you, West Forsyth will expose your weaknesses. East Forsyth will expose your – so will Shelby, and Watauga is a whole nother devil on its own. they will expose you really fast in the places that you're weak. And that's what I want. I want to know where we have problems. I want to know where we've got to get better before we get into the conference, before we get to playoffs. And I think playing people like that does that. And then the last thing is it's fun. I mean, our kids work pretty much year-round to be football players at Reynolds. And they want to play in big games. They want to play in games that a lot of people are looking at. And – we talked about East Forsyth. When we play East Forsyth this year, they're going to have a group of a lot of good football players. They got a quarterback that's committed to Carolina. They got a running back that just transferred in that's got offers from everybody. And Eli's going to be played in that game. He's got offers from a lot of people. Max is already committed. We've got some other kids that are being pretty heavily recruited right now. There's going to be a lot of good football players on the field at one time. And that's fun. I mean, There are games on our schedule that I don't look forward to as much because. But not that one. I mean, that's one that you don't sleep all week. You watch a ton of film and you're fired up and ready to play it because you know how good you're going to have to be that night to win it. But I think those are the biggest reasons we do it.
I know what struck me is that you said it's fun. No fan likes to see their team win, 50 to nothing. That's not a fun game to watch, unless you're maybe the backup quarterback's mom. But those first four are fun to watch.
They are. And I feel like our community is a football community, and and it appreciates good football. And you know, they like seeing those games too. If you're gonna take your Friday night and decide that you want to support Reynolds football, let's give you something good to watch. But at the end of the day, I think it just pays off. It pays off for the players, and it hopefully plays off, you know, at the whole team perspective as you get later into the season.
So you've been at this a year or two. What's the biggest change in high school football from when you started to where we are now?
Oh, gosh. I think the biggest change is the and it's not so much players, it's what is dumped into them, that if you're a pretty good high school player, you automatically are going to go play in college. Or if everything is not going exactly the way you want it, it's time to go somewhere else. And that's not just high school football. That's football across the board everywhere. And I don't know if that's really – I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but it's a change. And it's, you know, it's a change you have to adjust to. It's coaching is a very fluid occupation. You have to keep changing with kids because kids are different. The kids I coached 10 years ago are a lot different than the kids we coach right now. And the kids when I first came to Reynolds in 1997 were a ton different than what we're coaching right now. But the job is still the same. It's to help develop young men and help them win some football games and hopefully give them an experience that they'll remember until the good Lord takes them home. I mean, I can remember so much of everything about playing high school football. And there's a lot of things that happen in high school that I've long forgotten. But football, I remember every piece of it. And that's what I want for our kids. I want them to – because not everybody's going to go to college, and even some of the guys that go to college, it's different. It's not the same. It's a job, and there's not to say that there's not a lot of fun parts about it, because there are, but it's just different. And I think high school football is, as much as possible, is still a pretty pure, you know, pretty pure thing.
Definitely.
I think, you know, and just tying in other sports, it's sacred comes to mind because it's just that high school sports, like you're competing with your friends, you've got your pep rallies, you've got your all, you know, baseball, you've got showcases on the weekend, yeah. You got all this stuff, and it's there's just a difference of when you've got the sense of community. One of my customers, his son, he owns Black Mountain Tire, shout out Bill, but his son, Bill McGee, and his son like tells me like his thing that he looks forward to most is just like Rocket. They go to Rocket baseball games, they go to soccer games, watch his daughter, but there's that sense of community that you just don't have. And then, like you said, college is a whole different beast. It's, you know, you've got coaches that, you know, are getting, you know, you get fired off wins and losses. You got, so I think, you know, what you said about the, you know, there's just a special place in sports. And for right now, I still agree with you. They're high school sports is, there's, you know, something about it.
Well, and I think it's, you know, football is still, for the most part, 7-on-7 is trying to mess with it. But for the most part, you know, it hasn't been messed up with club coaches. It hasn't been messed up with travel and AAU. And it's still pretty much community-based. And, I mean, yeah, we're getting transfers, and we've got guys that are transferring out. I mean, everybody's dealing with that. And it's you know, as far as kind of similar to what's happening in college. But for the most part, it's guys who have played together for a long time, guys who have been together for a long time. And we have, I think, one of the benefits, too, of football and high school football in particular is we have an off season. We have a time where we're not out there playing. And so, you know, we're lifting weights and doing all that other stuff, but our kids were so excited to go out for spring ball. I mean, because they hadn't played football since end of November. And they were fired up and ready to go. I mean, my daughters were soccer players. One of them still is. And I drove all over the country going to travel soccer tournaments and stuff. And it's, you know, you watch you watch them lose a soccer game or a club game or whatever. You know, by the time we got in the car, whatever. Yeah, we got another game tomorrow. But then I watched them play in high school. And when they lost, they were their junior year, they lost in the semifinals. And they were crushed. They were crushed because they were playing with their friends. They were playing with girls that they, you know, they grew up with. And they were playing in front of their friends. And they were playing in front of a community that had watched a lot of them play since they were little. And so I think that's the difference. And that's why I will fight as long as I'm in this to protect high school sports. And because I even think on the baseball side of it, college baseball coaches are starting to realize, all right, we created a monster with this travel thing, and it's biting us in the butt with the kids, how we're recruiting it. We need to get back with the high school coaches. We need to, because they're the ones that really know these kids. They're not paying, you know, however much it costs to play travel baseball. I'm sure it's a lot if it's like soccer. But, you know, so, you know, coaches are not going to be scared to share the truth with a college coach. But we've got to protect the integrity of high school sports, I think, is because it's one of the last things that's actually still teaching kids hard lessons. And sometimes it doesn't go well. And sometimes you're going to go home and you're going to be upset. And sometimes people are going to yell at you and say things you don't like. It's okay. But I don't know. That's my little soapbox on high school sports, I guess.
I like it. It also included a face mask grab back when we played.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's part of my neck and back issues.
Well, you were mentioning, obviously, some of the things that's going on with college and stuff. And, you know, they had that big, huge settlement, college football with the Power Five here a week ago?
Yeah.
And you know, the talking heads that I saw going back and forth were talking about that's the end of amateur athletics, basically, at that point. Does that, I mean, that's got to affect a little bit maybe what high school and what you're going to be dealing with.
It's all, you know, it all, and it's happened for years. The things that are happening in college trickle down to us in one way or another. I mean, you've seen it obviously with the transfer portal and how players feel like, you know, I gotta go where I feel like I'm going to be happy or where it's going to be the best benefit for me. And now you got the money part going in, and they're going to fight. The NIL, you know, NIL's coming to high school kids. It's going to – I don't know who's going to pay it, but I think I joked with y'all last time I was on this. I did when I was in high school. I got a job at a grocery store because I was a pretty good football player, and the manager knew me. That was my NIL. Yeah, I got –
That's the best kind of NIL.
I got a job at a grocery store. But it's coming in one – way or another to high school kids. I don't know exactly what it's going to look like, but I think it's going to depend on where you are, type of community you're in, all that kind of thing.
So what's the biggest challenge for a high school football coach right now?
I think the biggest challenge is putting together a great staff. People say nice things about me sometimes and what we've accomplished at Reynolds. And the only thing that I will really take credit for is the staff that I've been able to put together. I coach fantastic kids that work extremely hard and want to be successful. And I work with a group of guys who are unbelievable football coaches. And they're rough around the edges, and sometimes they're not the easiest guys to take if you're a player. But I'm with them every day, and I know how much they love the players that they coach. And it's fun because there's like 12 of us, and there's 12 different personalities. So, you know, we're all different in the way we coach kids and how we, you know, respond to kids. But I feel like our locker room knows that, you know, those coaches care about me. And, I mean, I had a player the other day do a stupid thing and get his car stuck in a ditch. And he called me. And at first I was a little aggravated that because I was supposed to take my wife out to dinner, and instead I'm on the side of the road trying to figure out how to get this dude's car out of the ditch. But on the other side of it, I love that kid. He's a great kid, and he called me because he felt like maybe I would have some kind of answer to help him get out of this little problem that he had. And that's why you coach. I mean, it's the relationships we develop with these kids. We're all competitive, and we want to win football games. And but the biggest reward is when they call you after they have their first baby, or they call you and tell you they're going to get married, and you get to see all the – you see them grow up, and hopefully they turn into the men that you want them to turn into, or that you tried to model for them as much as possible. And I mean, it sounds a little bit corny, but at the same time, it's pretty cool. I talked to a former player the other day. He's a captain, or I don't know if he's a captain, but he's high up in the Army, and he's stationed up in Alaska. He got married a couple years ago, and they're expecting their first child. And he wanted me to know about it. And that's cool. That's something that on the bad days and when you're not playing well and all that other stuff, that's the stuff that makes you really appreciate the profession.
So you speak about, the hardest thing is getting the coaches. One of those aspects has to be funding for it the is. Coaches, right? Because every man has to make that decision. Am I going to donate this time for $1,500 or more, right?
And yeah.
So one of the coaches we had on here before talked about the disparity between North Carolina and so many states around us.
Yeah.
And North Carolina is one of the most industrious states around, but we don't seem to focus on funding sports. Do you care to speak on that for a minute?
No, I will. we don't focus on funding education in general. And that's what I'm talking about when I'm talking about putting a staff together. I started coaching in 1997. Coach Craig, we've been together almost our whole career. He started in 95. Coach Brow started in 90, I think, or late 80s. And there's Coach Morgan started in late 90s. You don't have what coaches and administrators are having a hard time finding right now are people that will get into this profession as a young man and stay in it and continue to develop and get better as a coach and as a teacher. And the main reason they're not doing it is because of money. And I've got former players right now that are coaching in other places, and as much as I hate to say it or admit it, when I talked to them about going into this profession, I told them, go to South Carolina or Georgia. Don't do it here. And when I first started teaching and coaching in 1997, it was better. We were consistently getting raises, not big raises, but we were getting raises every year. There were some things in where if your school did well, testing-wise, you got some financial reward for it. We had longevity where they rewarded you for staying in the profession monetarily, basically. And all those things are gone. And what's frustrating to me is why education has become political, because it's a necessity. We have to educate young people. I mean, if you like private schools and you want it, that's fine. But at the end of the day, there's only so many private school seats in our state. The bulk of the students in our state are going to go to public schools. We have to support public schools. We have to support teachers. I'm not scared to say it. I'm politically pretty conservative. But this overwhelming thing that's out there, that there's all these teachers that are pushing kids into these weird directions. No, they're not. I mean, I'm not going to say that there's not some out. I'm sure there are. I don't see them. Been in education for a long time. My children have come through Buncombe County schools. I'm not seeing these teachers that everybody's scaring folks about. So I just think it needs to be less of a political issue. I've got a friend that's coaching in Georgia. He's around my same age. You know, he makes almost $250,000 a year.
That's about half of what you make? Yeah. I'm just kidding.
He meant Pat. That's about agony. That's Pat Paul money.
Not even close.
And I'm not saying that, I'm not saying that I should be making $250,000 a year, but it is such a huge gap. And not just football. I'm talking about, the teaching part, every sport in the states surrounding us is dramatically different.
Well, really, other than football, there's almost no funding for any others. Like, football funds almost every other sport.
Yes.
Yeah.
So if you're a young coach coming in, you hire a young coach tomorrow, what does he make?
Well, teaching-wise,
Let's say he's a teacher.
If he's a teacher and a coach, and just a football coach, he's probably going to make around $40,000.
How much will he make in South Carolina or Georgia?
South Carolina, starting out, doing the same thing, he's probably going to make closer to 55 or 60.
And typically that teacher would have a master's degree, right?
No.
Master's degree?
Yeah, bachelor's degree, because North Carolina doesn't pay for your master's anymore. They used to, you would get a higher pay if you had a master's degree and a doctorate, so on and so on. Well, North Carolina doesn't reward you for that, so you can have as many degrees as you want, but it's... Now, in other places, they do. But Georgia does this crazy thing. They have an education lottery, and they take the money that they make on the education lottery, and they put it into education.
We also have an education lottery.
We do have one. but I'm not sure. It's become very political on how all the money goes here and there and so forth. When I was coaching in the Shrine Bowl and we were down in Spartanburg the whole week, Spartanburg High School hosted us. And so we were using their facilities, and that school was relatively new, and they showed us around. And I mean, it's unbelievable. But North Carolina, we're producing a whole lot more money from our state.
That's right.
Than South Carolina. It's just what you value. And, that's the thing that it worries me for the future of high school sports, because people who are talented and people who love it like I do and the guys that I work with, I'm afraid they're going to start going to other places. And you're seeing it right now. I mean, the thing, all the coaches that are around my age, they get to a point when they can retire, and then, boom, they're gone to South Carolina. They're gone to Georgia, where you can double dip. And – they're all saying the same thing. You wouldn't believe this. You won't believe what they do.
So one of the other coaches we interviewed said that, in the next 5 to 10 years, there's going to be a mass exodus of the coaches that, like you, have stuck around. Are you worried for the amount of coaches that are leaving and the talent that's following them behind them?
I'm worried because there's just not enough. There's a lot of, like Chandler Greer, who coaches our O-line, is an unbelievable football coach, and he's young, and he's going to be a great head coach one day. Well, you used to could find Chandler Greers on almost every staff where you would.
You kind of knew who the guy was going to be.
Yeah. And now it's – and what worries me some is what's happening in high schools, because they're not able to – when I was in high school, every coach, no matter what, baseball, football, basketball, it didn't matter. Every coach in our high school taught. Was on staff. And the one thing I can say about Reynolds, we've pretty much been able to hold on to that model. We've got a handful of coaches that are off campus. But at a lot of schools right now, you have all these coaches that are coming in from the community. And that's not saying they're not good coaches, but my career is tied to AC Reynolds High School. If I go coaching a football game over at Asheville High School and act like a fool, yeah, I might not be the football coach anymore, and I may not be a teacher anymore either. I mean, I have a certain responsibility to this community and to the school to behave in a certain way. Well, if you're, if you're a guy that owns his own business or works somewhere else during the day, you don't know what you may get from a guy when emotions get crazy. But what are you going to take that supplement away from me? There's not a lot to tie people to trying to do a good job. But to answer the question, I'm just worried about sheer numbers of qualified, dedicated high school teachers that are coaches and that we're used to seeing in our area or in our state in general. And it's just because it's what other places are offering, it would be hard. I mean, if you're a young guy coming out right now, it would be hard to say, well, I'm not going to take this job at this place, but I'll take $25,000 a year less to stay. And then on top of that, you know, one of the things that we face in our area in Buncombe County is it's so dang expensive to live here. And, you know, you'll have openings for head football jobs in this area that are good jobs, and there's really good coaches from off the mountain that may have an interest in it. Well, even though the money may be the same, that money off the mountain goes a whole lot further than it does here. So you're not getting – it's harder to attract coaches from other areas when they get up here. When I first came to Reynolds in 1997, Katie and I were not married yet. I was able to rent an apartment and teach and coach and be here by myself until we got married. You couldn't do that now. You can't, you know, a guy just getting out of college that, you know, took a job in this area coaching and teaching, he would have to find a buddy or somebody that was helping him out, because you can't live like a normal adult is supposed to live in this area right out of college.
How do we fix it?
We got to pay more. I mean, and it's not, you know, it's we just have to pay more for the profession and what it is. And what I see, there's so many kids that rely so much on their coaches and their teachers. You know, teaching whatever it is in the classroom all day is one thing, but there's so many other responsibilities that teachers are taking on right now to help kids because they care about the kids. But you're forcing them out of a profession that they really care about and then they really love, or you're forcing them to go to another place and do it. But we have to do it at the state level, and we have to do it at the local level. And like I said earlier, we politicize everything now. Education's got to be one of those things. They've got, you know, Democrats and Republicans have to be able to sit down and say, all right, this is a necessity. You know, we've got to do this right. We may disagree on some other things, but this we got to do right.
I think one of the things that's overlooked, and we talked about it in one of our other interviews, is that I think all of us can relate to a coach at some point that's been a mom, a dad, a therapist, you know, a friend. I mean, those are the things that need to be kind of paid for. And all this extracurricular stuff outside the lines that a coach does, and a teacher.
Yeah. I'm not bragging, because every coach that I know in this area has done the same thing I've done. I've paid power bills before for people. I've bought groceries or bought Ingles cards for kids and families, helped them find an apartment when they got kicked out of the one because it was too expensive. And I mean, I don't mind doing that because I love the kid and I care about the kid and I want to make sure they're safe. And like I said, that's not just something that Shane Laws does. That's all coaches are doing that. Coaches all over Western North Carolina are doing that. And all over our state. But people, you know, people don't realize all they see is Friday night. And I mean, Friday night is just the tip of the iceberg to what all this really is.
And one of the cool things that I know you do is you do like a Bible study. You try to, you know, help them in that aspect as well. And not a lot of people know that.
Well, I think our main, not just me, but coaches in general, especially with young men, our main purpose is to help them grow up to be real men, good husbands, good fathers. Because in my opinion, we're failing a little bit at that. With, you know, we talk about toxic masculinity, and this, I mean, come on, we need dudes. We need real men, and you know, somebody's got to teach that, and I think coaches all over the place are doing that and trying to do that, and you know, it worries me that that's why, you know, at practice, my wife will show up to practice. When my daughters were growing up, they were at practice. Gia still comes to practice, and all of my assistant coaches, their wives are going to be there. If we have a pregame meal or we have some kind of special thing, they're going to show. I want them to see what that looks like, because it may not look like that at their house, and help them see there are other ways to do this. And it's a whole lot easier if you'll just do it the right way. And and take some responsibility. And it's hard. It's not easy. I mean, all y'all sitting here know that. And I tell the kids all the time, there's going to be months where there's too much month and there's not enough money left and the baby's sick and you and your wife haven't got along for 3 days. But on the football field, you're not going to quit. You're not just going to walk away and quit because it was a hard day and it was too hot and Coach Laws yelled at you too much. I mean, that's life. There's going to be hard stretches in it, and we can take the same things that we're preaching to help us win football games and win in other parts of our life, and that you can do at 45 that you were hearing about at 16.
Well, back to your point about adding your coaching staff and how good they are for you, I'm really glad to hear that you're getting some extra help for Coach Morgan, because listening to Coach Morgan, not only on the practice field, but up in the press box, passion is not quite the right word for him. And I know he's in all in, and I worry about him having an ulcer or an aneurysm or something.
My daughter Anna ran track for him, and so she's at Carolina now, and she watches the games on the live stream. Well, y'all sit relatively close to Coach.
There's a door and a wall.
I know, and so. There's been more than once where after the game, I check my phone and it's Anna. Dad, you got to tell Coach Morgan he's got to calm down.
I can hear it. One of the first four games I don't know which one it was last year, but whoever was doing the video had to have been sitting in his left hip pocket because every time Hayden didn't make the throw, I was like, oh yeah, Coach Morgan. I mean, passion is definitely there.
He is a fantastic football coach, but to say that he's low key would you never wonder how he's feeling about something.
Yeah, it was true. Well, and you hear Coach Craig on the practice field; he's pretty vocal sometimes too. So
he is. It's become my job as I've gotten older. Between Coach Morgan and Coach Craig, all of them, I'm the guy that just kind of goes behind them and puts my arm around them. It's all right. It'll be all right.
Oh, wow.
So we talked about money and taking care of things and upping salaries. How hard is it to fund a football program at a public school? I just got an email for your fundraiser the other day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What are your big expenses and how does all that work with your athletic department, your booster club? How do you get all that done?
I think it's, first of all, to answer the question, it depends on how you want to live. It depends on how you want. And my goal has always been with our players, I want them to feel as close as they can to what it feels like to play in college, because most of them won't have that chance. They work really hard, and they give a lot to us and to the community. I want them to feel special in the way that they're treated and the way they live as a Reynolds football player. So because of that, we have to raise a lot of money. Typically we're going to do 4 to 5 fundraisers a year. We try to raise between $30,000 and $40,000 a year. And part of that is because of the travel. When you're going to Forsyth County, you got to take a charter bus, especially that time of year, it's hot and you're feeding them. You're feeding them on the way down. You're feeding them on the way back. Because that's, to me, one of the biggest challenges with coaching young men right now is they don't know how to eat. And so we try to feed them as much as possible. And I have to give a lot of credit to the moms. We have a group of moms that kind of take that on as, they're the food people. And they do such a good job of making sure our kids are taken care of. Our guys come off the field on Wednesday. There's food waiting on them in the locker room. Sometimes they get something special on Thursday. Friday, we have a pregame meal. Then usually Friday after the game, there's something for them. So that's a big chunk of money right there. And then just the extras, we try for our players. I don't want there to be a lot of expense out of their own pocket to play football. Really, the only thing we ask them to spend money on now is just a pair of cleats. And they can walk in our locker room, everything they need is there. It's in their locker. We wash everything for them. We take care of everything for them. And we try to look as good as we can possibly look. I want them to be proud of who they are and what they look like on Friday nights. We've got a deal with, you know, with Nike. It's not the same deal as Oregon has, but it's you know, pretty much everything our players wear is Nike. And again, it's a small thing to us sitting here, but to the players it means a lot. And you know, when we go in the weight room, we all look the same. We're dressed the same. When we go to practice, we're all dressed the same. Just things like that that you want to try to make the experience as special as you can. And that doesn't mean you don't have to do that. There's other schools that don't do all that. You don't have to. That's just what we like to do and we want to do. And because of that, we have to raise a lot of money. The money that comes in on Friday nights from the gate basically takes care of what you got to have. You know, you got to have helmets. You got to have shoulder pads. You got to have footballs. And there's nothing that we need that we don't get at Reynolds. And I think that's every sport. And there's always things I want that we don't get. But on top of that, you know, whether people want to hear it or not, football funds everything else. If you're not successful at the gate on Friday nights, it makes it really hard for a lot of those other sports. Basketball, especially at Reynolds the last several years, has been really successful, both boys and girls, and they bring in a lot of money, and they're pretty much able to sustain, take care of themselves. But football takes, on most high school campuses, football and college campuses, football is going to take care of, you know, being able to offer all these other sports.
So talking about the gate and all that and moving into this 8A system and all, would you be opposed to getting rid of conferences and you just scheduling 10 games? Because we've all been there. We've made choices not to go to a Reynolds football game when they're facing Inca because no one wants to watch 64-0.
I think you're going to have either districts or conferences just to set up parameters for how a team makes the playoffs. Because, you know, we're on this RPI system now that helps contribute to who's making playoffs. And that's another reason we play such a tough front end, because you're rewarded in the RPI system. Even if you lose, usually don't take a big hit. Right. Because those teams are really good and they're playing other good people. We've been in situations where in the conference we have won a game and our RPI has dropped.
Yeah, when you beat Inca, right?
Well, I'm not gonna say that, but there have been times when that's happened. So, but to answer the question, I think you would have to still have some type of conference or district, and even in some of the teams that are maybe not quite as strong right now, there's still good reason our kids like to play them, because they know guys that play on those teams and they played those teams when they were growing up in youth league, and there's still. There's still somewhat of a rivalry. There's some way you could pick out a rivalry on our schedule with pretty much everybody in Buncombe County. And there's one reason or another that game is important, to especially to the players. But I think you would have to. If we go pick 10 games that we think are going to be 10 great games that people want to see, and then somebody else goes and plays a weaker schedule. You know, we finished 7-3. They finished 9-1 and get to go into playoffs higher than us. That's, I don't like that.
And then also talk about funding. How tough would it be for you to find 10 games? I mean,
it's tough. You would
play a lot of teams off the mountain, because I can tell you right now, the day you guys move out of some teams in your conference, I don't see them calling your phone to say, hey, Shane, you want to play in October, November? When do you want to play to prepare you for the playoffs?
Yeah, and those early front end games, that's part of that too. Just because we can't schedule locally, the teams that would play us, even if we were not in that conference, Robertson would play us, Asheville would still play us, but outside those two, Irwin would play us. But outside of those, I don't know if we would still be able to get those other games. So I appreciate the conference just because it allows us to get 10 games. And because you don't want to drive off the mountain every other week.
No. Five weeks in the Charlotte area?
That's – and, you know, we kind of did that years ago when we were in the Northwestern Conference, and it wasn't good because you would play a home football game against Alexander Central, and, you know, we may have a good crowd, but you'd look across the stands, and they'd have 42 people because it was a 2.5-hour drive for them, and they maybe not as good that year. So it's, you know, the conference still has value.
So tell us, what's your greatest football memory at AC Reynolds?
That's hard.
Last time we asked you about the – I can't remember how we worded it.
It was the greatest players or whatever.
It was most football guy. I gave that question. I thought he was going to say Justin St. Ange. And
he went with the brother.
He went with his brother.
Yeah.
He went with Nate.
Yeah. I know. I got some flack over that.
Really?
Did you really?
Those were good answers.
Not from Justin, but, you know, the normal, everybody was Rico. And Rico, who – I love like he's my own kid, was the most talented athlete that I've ever been around.
You even said that.
Yeah. But as far as just football dudes, you know, James Lee and St. Ange, I mean, they could do anything and everything at the drop of a hat. But as far as memories, ooh.
You got a few years to scroll through there.
Yeah. Every year has been a blessing, and it's been different things that have been cool that happen. I think when you the state championships, not just because we won a state championship, but because there's so many things that have to happen weird to line up to win one. I don't care how talented you are. Everything has got to – I mean, in 09, we won it and beat Dudley, who had like 14 D1 guys, had three guys that had – pretty substantial careers in the NFL. Beat them 9-8 to go to the state championship. And it's just the way the game unfolded. It was muddy. It was nasty. They didn't have a good kicker. And they couldn't decide at the end of the game, do we kick or do we try to go for it? And they ended up getting a penalty because of it, which helped us, took them out of field goal range, and then they had to go for it. That game – that night at Dudley is probably one of the top just because there were so many weird things that happened, and it was almost like, you know, God said, Reynolds, you're going to win this. Because it was kind of similar to Kings Mountain. Yeah. We scored a touchdown, and Rick Roberts was our defensive coordinator at the time, and I told Rick, I said, Rick, we're not going to score again. I don't know if we'll get another first down. and our defense just – kept finding ways to get stops. And games like that, the Kings Mountain game, and there's one or two every year where you just see the toughness of kids. When we played Sun Valley in 2010, I think, the year after, that would have been 2018, played Sun Valley.
No, with Sam Howell?
Yes.
Oh, in the rain?
The second one. Yeah, the second one. Yeah. Where it turned into, it started off just cold. And then it started raining. And then we started getting ice and snow. And it was miserable.
Yeah, we were there.
I'll never forget Lewis and I sitting there. I still tell people today, I saw Reynolds High School hold Sam Howell to 42 yards passing.
Right.
Now, I don't tell them it was raining and sleeting and a mess.
It was awful. And that's after being in Boone for 5 years. I mean, I've never been so cold and I wasn't playing. I mean, I'm coaching and I've got on. We went in at halftime. We wasn't on the board. We weren't fixing anything. We were pulling uniforms off guys, throwing them in the dryer and finding, you know, they were all changing what was underneath their uniforms. The blessing was playing at home that we could do all that. And it was awful. But our kids were so tough that night. They just would not lose.
Mike and I were sharing a propane heater that night, and it was so cold it froze the propane heater up.
We also went in at halftime to the bathroom.
Yeah, we went to the bathroom.
With our hands under the heater.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you.
It was wild.
Something funny about that night, and I didn't know this happened until after the game, but we had a player. He was a backup player. He didn't play very much. So we come in at halftime, and we're scrambling, trying to do everything we can for the players. This guy left. He was, I'm not going to play. We're in the third or fourth round of the playoffs. It's miserable. They're not going to put me in. He put his clothes on and left.
Wow.
And wow. I didn't know about it until after the game. I mean, needless to say, that was his last game. But, but dude just left. That's how bad it was.
I've done the play-by-play for Reynolds now for 4 years up there, and I got to tell you, there are two games that stand out that were literally like movies. And it was that Chambers game when the kicker went out there and kicked an NFL field goal to get the win.
That's
after it, they ran out through your tunnel, through your workout work, and chanted at you at the center court line.
That's when Pat almost lost his
mind. I did about lost my mind up there on that one. And then the other one was that Kings Mountain game when, I mean, Tyvon Patterson's getting the ball down. You're got 37 yards of total offense in the game. He grinds it out. You're down to the 20 and out trots Max Guest. I mean, can you draw up a better script than that? I mean, good Lord.
Well, he was on a pitch count that night.
Yep.
That's right. He can only play like five or something.
Yeah, the doctor told me he had seven or eight, I think eight carries. He was allowed eight carries that night. So, I mean, we even had a staff meeting before the game. You know, how are we going to use him? When are we going to use him? And that fit one of the scenarios. So, let's go.
What was that, like a 40-yard run or something?
Yeah. I mean, it was right off the left side, and it was wide open. And
the crazy thing was he got hurt. You know, he got hurt last year in the scrimmage.
Against Kings Mountain, yeah. Yeah,
and I talked to their coach a few weeks after that game was over, and it was like, you know, that was some dramatic irony. That it all the way it unfolded.
For me, going to Richmond County back in the day and winning at Richmond County, that was – they hadn't lost. I think Reynolds got off the bus, and they were like, is this the JV team?
Yeah, that was – I remember that. I remember that was a young coach. I'd only been coaching 2 or 3 years, and I just remember praying from Asheville to Richmond County. Not that we win the game. It was just, you know, those kids were so tough and had been so great all year. I just – Lord, just – don't let them get embarrassed tonight. You know, they've done so much and been so good. They don't deserve that. And then to go out there and play the way we played and beat them that night. That, I mean, there's just story after story after story that's been pretty cool.
Well, Coach, I think we've burned up a lot of time. Is there anything else you want to share that we haven't asked you that you want to bring up or talk about with your players or the season or anything that's on your mind?
Well, I think there's, you know, it's like I said, it's May 29th, so
it's early.
It's early, but we are very optimistic about this group. We've still got exams to do and summer school, so those are things that as a coach you get nervous about, but this is another really good group of kids, and it's the one of the cool things is we've been blessed and been successful to win a lot of games and championships and all that stuff. And every group is different, and this group is different. They're their own guys, and I think they're going to be entertaining. I think they're going to be fun to watch for the fans in Fairview and East Asheville. They're definitely going to be worth the ticket price. And we got a lot of work to do this summer and you know, go back talking about money when any of that fundraiser stuff hits your email or comes across. Help us out. We got a golf tournament that'll be coming up soon. I'm going to do the golf tournament like we always do in July, and we're back at Kenmure again. So for the golfers out there, that's a good chance to get a chance to play at Kenmure. And
Coach
Green takes care of that for us. We kicked off our online fundraiser Monday, I think, or maybe yesterday. But it takes money to do this, and these kids work really, really hard, and we want to make it special, and we want to keep winning.
Now, you mentioned in the first podcast that you and Katie, when you have the few days off that you get, like to go skiing.
We do.
So I'm curious, you've obviously skied out west. I think you shared that with us before. Have you ever skied over in Europe?
No, that's...
That's South Carolina money there.
That's Georgia money.
Georgia money.
One of the things, my wife is Italian, and her family immigrated to the United States, her great-grandparents. But anyway, we want to go one day and ski the Alps. There's a train that runs through the Alps, and you can hit every country and ski. And that's kind of, in retirement, when all this football stuff is done, that's one of our, that's the big thing we want to do.
Is that going to be like first retirement or second retirement?
Yes. That'll be I'm joking. I don't know. That'll be, that'll be down the road a little bit. We're going to have to, remember, I got two kids in college right now.
Yep.
And I got another one that'll be there at some point. And so there's still a lot of bills to pay before we get to do anything like that.
What's the first thing you do when football season's over? When it's all done, what do you do?
Usually, honestly, you know, unless you were fortunate and won the whole thing, I sit there for a week and take notes on what we need to do better. When it's fresh on my mind, I will spend about a week and just write. I've got notebooks in my office from each year at the end, and I just go through them and write what we did well, what we didn't do well. And I do a thing with our seniors. I meet with our seniors. Usually I try to do it 2 or 3 days after the season's over. And I ask them, what did you like? What did you not like? What do you think helped you? What do you think didn't help you? What would, if you were me, what would you do to make the experience of playing here better or more special? And I've got notebooks from what the kids have said, and we try as much as we can, to listen, because they're the ones that are out there playing, and they're the ones that are lifting all those weights and doing all those things that you got to do to play. But now, if you win the whole thing, you just float around for a couple of weeks.
Well, good. No, the only other skiing question I had for you on that is, you've obviously done the North American ones. What's the best one to go to in your mind?
I don't know. One of the places we have not gone that we would like to go is Jackson Hole.
Oh, boy. It's gorgeous.
We haven't gone there. I would like to go there, and I would like to go to Telluride. I've never been to Telluride, and I've heard it's beautiful. But it's the one thing I have that helps me is that I've got a former roommate in college that he works at Breckenridge. He's high up in the ski school. And so he's able to help us out with lift tickets, because lift tickets out there are ridiculous. I mean, you get mad when you go over here to Cataloochee and think, oh, you go out there and $200 a day just to ski.
Sure.
It's definitely a sport that's not really catered to a public educator.
Now, there has been some viewer questions. Does Pat help fly you out there?
Agony. Do not have a plane.
Unfortunately, no.
No.
He should, though.
I mean, he should.
Oh, I think that'd be a great idea.
Yeah.
Great. I'm going to hear about that, too. Oh, boy. Yeah, where'd you fly, Coach? I don't know if you know the story, Coach, but this whole thing about the money. I think it was when we went out to East Forsyth last year. I think it was Mac's guest grandmother came up, and I had not met her. She's a very nice lady. She came up, and we're talking, have a great conversation, and just talking about everything. And then she goes, so, Pat, tell me, did you drive out here from Candler, or did you take the plane?
Did you tell her you took the plane?
No, I
absolutely took the plane.
I just rolled my eyes, and, oh, gosh, here we go.
No.
Usually the driver brought us.
Driver. Yeah. I'm the driver.
Which is Brendan.
Now Brendan, yeah, but he was on the bus with them.
Coach, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for
you coming out.
Yes, sir. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
So until next time, we've got more coaches coming up down the road, and tune in and stay tuned, and we look forward to talking to you.
With a good-looking beard